I don't know. I just started. I wanted to say everything.
From Say Anything to Say Everything. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm Jason Burns.
And I'm Danny Nucci, and this is the What About Podcast, and that was just too easy for you.
Too easy. It was a slam dunk. You know what's so interesting? In reading Ione Skye memoir, she talks about being married to Adam Horowitz from the Beastie Boys. After I read the book, I went to go find my Beastie Boys CDs. I was like, oh, I haven't listened to those in a while. And then I realized I don't have a CD player anymore. So I actually rebought the records in digital format. And so she's inadvertently led sales to the Beastie Boys through her memoir, which is, and I wonder if that's going to happen more.
I'm sure it is. You know, she talks about, you know, those early, and especially those early Chili Pepper records that, you
yes,
know,
I know
everything before Blood Sugar Sex Magik, you know, was not a huge, huge hit.
It was actually Flea who introduced her to Anthony Kiedis, because they were friends, because Flea was an actor at the same time as well. You know, it's interesting to see all of the different, the weaving of all these various musical bands, like she says in her interview, of how they've become big, where at the time they weren't big.
Yes, and wealthy. Mm-hmm. but so without further ado, the charming and talented Ione Skye. Are you in LA? Should I say good morning?
Yes, I am. Where are you guys?
I'm in LA. He's in the forests of Massachusetts somewhere.
Oh, nice.
In the woods.
Oh, cool.
Have you been on the full run of interviews the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, but it's been nice. It hasn't been like those when I've done the press tours occasionally, when you're doing those back to back to back to back, where you're just like brain dead. So it's just been the perfect
first
amount.
Question, because you brought it up.
Yeah.
How is this different than doing press interviews for film or television, in terms of, because this is so friggin' goddamn personal.
I
so
know.
I'm just curious, like what the difference is, what your experience of it is.
Well, I've thought about what to say a little more, and I've been really thinking about others and myself and how I'm coming across, like way more than doing. Yeah, it's so personal. So
also, you're more invested in your life than maybe a movie you weren't a huge
fan of. Exactly. Yeah, that's true. Yes.
Well, you know, the memoir, which I loved, by the way, and I have some questions that I felt were unanswered for me as the reader. So I'm going to get into those later.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah, how many people that you've actually talked to actually read the book?
Most of them, thankfully. I swear.
That's amazing.
I swear to God. Well, it's sort of I did have one friend I sent it to, and she was like, I'm dyslexic. I haven't read a book in 5 years, and I could read this book. So I do think it's weirdly an easy read, thankfully, for some reason.
But what made you decide that now was the time to say everything, which is a great title, by the way?
Thank you. Got to have a gimmick. I there was kind of a lot of interest in people asking, younger people even, like, what was it like? And over the years, interest in Anthony. There was this podcast called Celebrity Memoir Podcast, where these girls were like, how could Ione Skye's mom let her date him when she was 16? And so I kind of clapped back, if that's the right word, and was like, well, my mom was sick to her stomach. She did not want me to. And I don't know. I just started, I wanted to say everything about my side of that with Anthony. And I did want to talk about what it was like being in LA and growing up in, you know, in New York and LA, whatever, in the 80s and 90s.
Well, and you had such an interesting upbringing in that your mom had sort of an open door policy, which was very sitcom like in terms of the wacky characters coming and going.
Oh yeah, we had some great roommates, and luckily she picked some really, you know, they were nice, but they were total like these Manchester hairdresser guys that were just like rockabillies that I loved. That was some of those two guys were some of my favorite roommates. They were like just total characters from, like, I don't know, like Quadrophenia or something. Like, yay, keep these guys around.
But wanting to tell your story and actually sitting down and doing it are two different things. Like, you know, and that's something that Danny and I always talk about.
Says the writer. But like, at what point did you go, okay, I'm gonna do that? Because I mean, obviously it's coming out now, but when did you start? When did you actually start it? And
almost,
how was that process? Were you able to was it like something you did and sat down and just put your head down and did? Or was it over time?
It was, it took from start to finish almost 3 years. I definitely didn't want to do it. I had a friend who was like, why don't you just write it and put it out yourself? But I was like, no, I don't have the confidence. And I really want just people behind me. And I am like, you know, herding cats. So I just, once it was organized to a certain extent with the editor of like, here's some chapters, this is sort of how we're going to frame it, then I needed like assignments. And then I would just write and write and write. And then we would kind of,
Did you have deadlines and whatnot? And you were like, I got to
get. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Because I love writing, but I will write like all over the place, like very non sequitur-y. And I didn't really want it to be, you know, super duper like out there poetic-y. I wanted to kind of rein it in, especially this, you know, it's a memoir, which is a different thing to writing, you know, an out there story or a poem. You know, I really wanted it to be sort of structured.
Did it make you look back at memories and say, okay, am I remembering this correctly as it happened? And do I need to fact check it with other people who were there?
Like, oh yeah. I did a lot of that. Mm-hmm. I do have a pretty good long-term memory. And some of the stories I'd been writing forever, like all my junior high stuff, I was like kind of being an actor. I guess I'm like a little obsessed with myself and also artistic. Like,
what do
I
you
am,
mean? I'm kidding.
Yeah, and I'm like very in love with life and people, and so I was just always like, you know, thinking of it like storybooky like that. But yeah, there's definitely a couple years so much happened. Like I was like, wait, I was with Anthony when I was doing Say Anything? Like really? Because I really compartmentalized that. Like I'd be working on the movie and just feeling sort of like so supported and good, and then go back into this like hellish thing I was in.
Where you had to be supportive and good for someone else, really, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So I think that's why I kind of almost forgot they were at the same time, because both of these experiences I felt were such different feelings. But I'm very good at remembering what I felt like, what I was wanting, you know, how I felt like excited and secure, like, you know, whatever. I can remember how I felt. But what I learned was that we all probably have like 20 or 30 or I don't know how many, I mean, these like core memories from the handful of memories from our childhood. But it's sort of like trying to remember a dream. The more you start doing it, you sort of can remember a little bit more. But I think I've gone over the same. That's why those are the ones in the book. They're the same memories that I've had, like remembering, and some aren't even that fantastical, but, you know, I remember that one trip in Queens, New York, and I remember the clock on the wall, and it's just those things that are just stuck in your head.
Well, and music plays a big part of your story and your life, and I notice, well, for me personally, that music can trigger memories. Did that happen for you when you were writing? Is that why you mention a lot of music playing at certain times?
Yeah.
And what a time for music. I mean, you know, the bulk of what, I mean, you're talking about, I mean, that's kind of my generation, you know, that was nuts, man. That late 80s, early 90s was an explosion.
I know, it really was. Yeah, I wonder what you were seeing. Yeah, the ones in particular that for sure as a little kid, you know, that Like a Rhinestone Cowboy, it's really funny because it almost doesn't go with Topanga, because when you think of Topanga in the 70s, you think more of like, I don't even know, like not like a Rhinestone
Hippie.
Cowboy.
I think of Hippie Dippy. Yeah, I definitely think of hippies.
And like Rhinestone Cowboy was just a crossover hit on the radio. But that really brings me back to a feeling of when I was a kid. And then later when I took road trips with Adam Horovitz, my first husband, when I hear those songs that we listen to on those mixtapes, like, over and over and
like
over.
What were you guys listening
well,
to?
Well, you know, I mean, at the obvious, I don't know, a lot of Dylan, a lot of dub reggae, a lot of, I mean, all over the place. Everyone was so into funk in the, you know, and of course a lot of rap and a lot of like hippie stuff, 60s stuff. And then, because it was a little bit before the whole
grunge thing,
even
yeah.
grunge, Nirvana and Britpop thing happened. So it was a lot of discovering old, or, you know, just deep cuts of things. And
well, also all that, yeah, LA music had an undercurrent of funk to it at that time. I mean,
yeah,
I think even like Jane's Addiction,
oh,
had,
yeah,
that undercurrent of funk.
Yeah.
You know, they came up right around that time.
Yeah.
All those LA,
yes,
bands,
I know,
Mary's Danish,
yes,
Fishbone, it all,
yes,
had that
I did the whole circuit. Like, I just went to so many Fishbone, Mary's Danish. I'm still friends with.
I was there.
Yeah, we saw each other. I was there. And yeah. Those clubs, I was trying to remember the name. I didn't name some of the clubs that, you know, you have to pick one name.
Palace, Raji's.
Yeah. Raji's.
Right?
That's the one I should have put in. That's so funny. I know, that was really cool. I felt too young, to be honest, but it was still really fun to see. I liked seeing Fishbone, was so fun. And the two Three Stooges and Thelonious Monster. Who else? Yep.
Saw them a few thousand times.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's so funny.
Well, Ione, I want to get into some of my unanswered questions.
Okay.
And I don't think they're too personal, but we'll see.
Well, you can see I'm not that afraid of talking about personal things.
So I was curious to start was what your mother thought of your sudden engagement to David, because you do talk about how she felt about some of the other relationships, but I don't feel like that was super touched on.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think at that point, my mother was sort of trusting my choices a little more than, like, I really put her through the ringer, of course, with Anthony. And then after that, I sort of pulled it together. And she was very sad, of course, with Adam. That breakup, she lost basically a son because they were, you know, she was his mom, basically. But yeah, I think she's perceived me in a good space, and I was. So I think she was trusting me. But it's interesting. I should ask her. And that's probably why it's not in the book.
Mm. And you were on different coasts then, right? They weren't living.
Yes, we weren't. But I had lived in New York. I don't know if she just got like so excited I was having a baby that she was just like fingers crossed. Mm-hmm. And I think she was just believing, we were all just like, yes, let's hope this works. This will be great. And it was, you know, it was almost like a weird arranged marriage or situation. Like, we could have just been friends having a kid together and done that whole thing that sometimes people do. I think she just was hoping for the best, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to ask her. Also, I'd have to ask her, to be honest, but I think she was sort of trusting me. But then she, once I got back to LA and was like, you know, I don't think I can do this, I think everyone was a bit like, wow. Well, yeah, that was fast, you guys. What are you doing? But I was.
How long was that? How long did that? It was a couple of years?
Oh, we decided to He's a very decisive person. Like, when he bought his house out here, he literally saw it and bought it like that day. But he has that kind of money, I guess. But he's very
for our listeners that haven't read the book. Can you?
Oh yeah. So listen. So this is a point in my life where I've had a young marriage at 21 to an amazing, wonderful person, and again, had it been 10 years later, you know, probably would have worked out. Or 15 years later, I was too young to be married. Then I find myself alone, which I should have been, and dating up a storm and being a bit out of control in my romantic life, but basically just working and dating. And then around 29, my biological clock just was like, I want a baby. And then for the first time in my life, I was really set up on a date by someone I trusted very much, and I still do. And she said, you should meet my friend. He's fabulous. He's this, he's that, da, da, da. And I really trusted her. And we went on it. We met, and then we talked, and then we talked some more. And then I went.
Even though he wasn't a musician, you were fine?
I know. Well, I was trying to do the
right. You're like, all right, let me try this.
Well, I just thought on paper, he sounded like he's very ordered and organized, and he has money, and he's creative, but he's an architect and an interior designer, and it's like very fashionable and smart, funny. So it just sounded like great. This all sounds great to me. And I met him and thought, well, he's a bit old fashioned, you know, he's a bit uptight, but he was very funny, handsome. I don't know. I just
eccentric, I think, like a musician. That's what
yes,
I took away.
Yeah. Very. And I think I thought his structured way of living was going to just pull my life together, and that would be
rub
great.
Off on you.
Yes, rub off of me.
Sure.
So it was a total fantasy, even though I felt like this is the right thing. This is sensible. Like, this is so sensible.
Finally, Ione, you're sensible. Thank God. Enough of all this running around like a crazy person.
Exactly. And of course, but then we both jumped in too fast. And then he sent me to his therapist and he was like, because we were like, let's have a baby. And we got engaged and we were just going for it. And all his friends were really terrific. And we had mutual friends. It was all feeling like, okay. But then the therapist is like, this is like a time bomb. You guys have 9 months to, you're going to get married and you have you're hoping it works out. So we
Jesus,
weren't.
Nice
we weren't,
therapist. I mean, talk about a
I know.
Bucket of cold water. By the way, enjoy love and making a family. Jesus Christ.
Well, but because it was already kind of like,
tense,
was,
yeah. Obviously, we were in therapy. There was things to work out.
But he sent you there for an ally, didn't he? Like, that was his goal with
yes,
that?
Yes, yeah. Yes. He was hoping it would pull me together.
Yeah.
But, then I thought.
Yeah, that always works.
I was like, let's wait. And then it kind of broke his heart. And then I rallied and I was like, wait, we should try. And he was like, no, I don't trust you anymore. And then I tried to, make it work. And then anyway, cut to it working out. But that was crazy. And it scares me thinking about how fast that happened.
Does it scare you more now that you have daughters as well?
Yeah. How old's your oldest?
24.
She's right there.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm she has a boyfriend and they've been together a while and she's already kind of like, oh, it'd be so nice to be married. But I'm just, we talk. We have a good communication and I'm just like, just make sure, because you might be ready or you might need to just still date mm-hmm. around, she's sort of thinking about it.
All right, my second question. In the book, you mention when Adam's childhood friend Nadia pulls you aside and says, don't hurt him. But yes. Then we never get the payoff of did anything ever come of that where she approached you after the relationship?
I was like,
ended?
What the fuck, Ione?
There's still time. No, we like DM. We DM a little bit. We still have mutual friends, Nadia and I. And I just would think of her sometimes is that's the payoff. And I could have put that in the book for more of a payoff where the reality is, more me thinking, oh my God, she would punch me out now. Mm-hmm. So we never had that scene in real life where she said, I told you to be good to him. I didn't think you would do this. That kind of thing never really happened in real life. But I did think about it and I felt ashamed thinking about her, thinking about me. And it's weird though, because we're sort of friendly on Instagram because I've always felt ashamed and thought that she would be mad at me. Hmm. For not being nice enough. If the readers don't know, I was cheating and he was the best.
Oh, they will. Oh, they will. Ione, they will know that you were an impulsive young woman.
Yes. I should have been in college just being.
No, but
whatever.
There's something really, and again, just Jason and I talking about it because I grill him I let him do the reading and then I grill him.
Okay.
But much easier for me.
Yeah.
But there's something to sharing these experiences and what you were thinking at the time and where your headspace was at the time that I think is going to be helpful for people to go, you know what, that makes sense to me. And if that's not explored, if it's just going on intuition and intuitiveness and not really taking a pause and exploring it, these are the things that happen.
Yeah.
Yet they all work out, right? You're like, I guess that was the journey.
Yeah. I think that there's that I really feel awful about hurting people, hurting him, hurting myself. But I do think that, ultimately I'm a good person. And I think the book goes really into just like my side of the story, what I was looking for, and also the whole time kind of thinking, what am I doing? So I was consciously thinking like, oh, I was struggling with these choices, but at the same time, I couldn't help myself at the time.
Well, and not to psychoanalyze you, Ione, but is part of that, and I know it's kind of touched on in the book, but is part of it like you were around a world of addiction with some of the people that were in your circle, but was finding acceptance and love your addiction, especially coming from like your experience with your father?
Yeah, honestly, one of the first things I said to my husband, I'm not going to mention love addiction in my book. I hate those terms. So new age or whatever, self-helpy. And then, you know, you're looking for themes. You're looking for what is this book about? And then I was just like, I'm like a total love addict or something, you know, obviously in addicted to intrigue and all of these mm-hmm. things. So for sure that ended up, you know, cut to, yeah, that's mostly what a lot of the book is about.
Yeah, sell your soul for perceived love and affection, yeah. Of course. By the way, prevalent.
Yeah.
It's quite, you right. are not alone.
Right, exactly.
It is quite prevalent. I mean, you know, I think if it could be done, 6 months relationships and then move on to the next one with no emotional attachments, be great. I couldn't do it, but yeah. It's a lovely idea.
Yeah, I know. And when I was, it's funny, you think what parts are going to be hard to write, what parts of your life? And what parts are going to be easier? And weirdly, the part where when my first husband and I was so, I'm not good at letting go. I still miss him as a friend and a person and so painful. But when I was living alone in New York after my breakup from my first marriage, there was a peace and a happiness there because it was probably what I was should be doing. It was the time when I was actually, you're in your mid-20s. This is what you should be doing. You should be just living alone or, you know, with, I had friends upstairs and down, you know, below me in my apartment. And it was just like fun and exploring and, you know, so that was kind of a peaceful time.
Mm. Well, from a selfish standpoint, Ione, before we get into our topic, I just want to ask a bit about the Nirvana Unplugged because you mentioned that in the book as well. Did it feel special when you were there live watching it?
Yes, it felt, it's so funny because so much of that experience for me was I was just obsessively watching Kurt Cobain. And what I do when I see a performer is I want them to be having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
It's so funny. So I was just hoping he was enjoying himself and he looked a little grumpy. And it was, yeah, it was really special. It was like...
How many people were there, would you say, in terms of like audience?
I'm bad at that. I'm
like a small club, very intimate.
Yeah, very intimate. In fact, I was really combing over when I was writing it. I was trying to look, there's footage, and I was really trying, I was trying to look for myself, of course, but then I was just really looking at the crowd and trying to kind of see. But yeah, it was very intimate. And as it went on, the more it went on, the more I think everyone was like, wow, this is something else. Because it kind of felt like, what is this? It almost felt like everyone going, we were going, is this corny? Is this like a bad, I think we all were like, what is this? It's like, what is this? And then I think it just felt as it went on more and more like unique and kind of amazing and intimate and just watching, I was just like obsessively watching their faces. Like, what are they experiencing? I probably should have been thinking about the music more than what are they experiencing?
No, but that's interesting because there were so few people there to be able to watch what their experience was. I think that's part of the experience.
Yeah, exactly.
And also just having been to so many shows. Having been to so many shows and really understand the difference between what's happening on stage and what happens before the performance and after the performance. And in between songs where you just like, you drop and then you come back out and you do it. I mean, it's a lot.
You had
a front row seat for years.
Yeah, absolutely. Being on the side of the stage and being also, it felt a little bit like my junior high boyfriend was he was a football player in school. And it was similar. I noticed
By the way, I would have lost a bet on that one. Just so you know.
I know.
Right? Absolutely lost a bet on that.
Not like, obviously in junior high, you're not professional. But I noticed like after the game, if they won, he was in a good mood. If they didn't, he was in a bad mood. So it was similar to a musician. Like you would be before, you know, hanging out in there. Sometimes, you know, they need space or sometimes not, however they are like. And then you watch the show. And then it's sort of like after backstage, because you might like it and they might think that wasn't a good show. So it was very kind of like, are they going to be in a good mood or not in a good mood? So it's just that whole
thing. Sounds like a marriage.
Exactly.
Are they okay? Are we okay? Going to the kitchen.
I'm okay. You're okay?
Baby, you okay? You all right? Is everything cool? Is it about me? No?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Never ends.
What about vulnerability?
I I'm curious if there was a different level of vulnerability in the different aspects of what you're doing, from the writing to the sharing to now getting ready to give it to the world.
Yeah, I think now I'm feeling maybe the most vulnerable. While I was writing it, I was so into just the story and getting, I was, you know, really like, it's not like active imagination, but I was just like in it and just in the story and not really thinking about that. And I, growing up in LA, people really do talk a lot about how, you know, themselves. So I'm kind of like that anyway. So I sort of say it all in my life anyway. The writing, I was just into the story. Then giving it to certain people was scary, like my mom, my brother. You know, I gave it to this woman, Alice Temple, and certain people, that felt vulnerable. And then also the feedback right away was so good. Like everybody, and that was great. Like the editor, the publisher, you know, my mom, I don't know if you can trust the mom thing, but she's quite like, if she doesn't like something, she will tell you, like, I didn't really like that movie. Like, or I did like that. I'm like,
which
okay.
is why I never show my mother anything.
I know. It's just like, I don't want you like to. It. Yeah. And I'm just like, just lie. That's how I'm different from my mother. With my kids, just everything's great. Everything's great. Anyway. And now I'm feeling the most vulnerable mm-hmm. because people are reading it and more people are reading it. I guess that's just it.
And everybody's got a soapbox online to talk about something.
Yes. I don't know how I'll deal with that. Like, I've got to get a thicker skin. Cause also the feedback's been
please don't.
But so far the feedback has been only good. And I'm scared for it not to be because sometimes I'm very fine with feedback. Like, for example, I did a play and I knew I was not great in it because I was sort of miscast and I just wasn't good. So all of the feedback, like a lot of shows and TV stuff, I'm kind of okay because I'm like, yeah, you're right. That wasn't my best thing. But this one, I'm so close to it. So far, the feedback's been only good. So I'm like a little nervous to hear bad feedback because I like it, you know, when I'm kind of like, yeah, I get what you're saying. That could have been better. I don't know. I'm going to be nervous. I'm going to be like one of those kings or like Trump, or it's like only good things. I only want to hear good things.
Well, but do you think your experience in terms of, you know, you've been to a lot of premieres of work that was done, I don't know, 3 to 6 to 9 months earlier.
Yeah.
And you're basically essentially getting the sense, or people are talking to you afterwards, but there's such distance from it. You know, it's
like, yeah,
we shot that whenever we shot that, you know.
That's right.
So you have that experience of like having to get the feedback of it. How is this different?
You're so right, because this has been my life for 3 years and there hasn't been much of a break. Then it just like plan the publicity tour and just get all the pictures together, and I've been living and breathing it, and then I'm just talking about it. So I don't have that space where I can look at it and think, oh yeah, maybe that was a little bit funny. I mean, you didn't say anything bad, but just saying that there was no payoff, that would have been a cool note to get. You know, like,
leave it to the writer, by the way.
Exactly.
Just like, for the record.
I was like, oh man, did that ever happen?
Right, right. So that's like, but honestly, I'm a good student in this, you know, with this book at least. And I would have thought, oh yeah, let's have a payoff with Nadia. Like, even if it's not a scene where she's like, punches me in the face, could be some form of that. Or, you
but
know.
Here's, I'll give you a compliment on that, Ione, because what it did was, it made me want to know more. So it wasn't like, I think if it was all self-contained in there, we wouldn't have as much to talk about because I would know.
Okay. That's good. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Huh. Cool. Yeah.
And it's a different vulnerability just because like there's something about auditioning, right? That's a whole level of vulnerability that is,
Something
else. But it's then there's you're on set and the crew's there and you've got that scene where you know, you got to go there. And there's no not going there.
Yes.
And you'll hate yourself if you don't go there.
Yes.
So you know you have to go there.
Yes.
That is a different level of vulnerability.
Yeah. Because if you're writing alone in a room, and I always jumped in my bed and felt like lazy, but I just liked bed as office. But you're alone and you're just, you know, sure you get feedback, but it's like you're alone. But
did you write freehand in a notebook, Ione, at first?
I used to write, you know, of course, but no, I did the computer. Oh, but I also did a lot of talking voice text for some of it. And then chat, GPT. No, I'm just kidding. I did. No, but I did. Sometimes I would do like a voice note. But but yeah, the scenes in front of the crew and stuff where you're the crying scene or whatever, it's a nightmare. That's worse.
Just any scene, you know, sometimes you have to basically be hurt. Allow yourself to be hurt.
Right. Yeah.
With, you know, 100 people watching it's no fun.
Yeah. I know.
Is it a different, and this is actors' questions. Is it different when you come on set for the first time as opposed to being there 2 weeks, that vulnerability?
Oh yeah. I just did always getting the first scene, you know, in the can or whatever you say, is just like, yeah, a couple weeks in, you're like, cool. You know, especially some longer like TV things when you know your character, I guess. I never got there with some of them. Oh, there's that classic thing. I've only done a couple plays, but the last night.
Oh, you're like,
now I know.
Click,
I know how to do it.
Click for you. Wait a minute. Now I don't have to think anymore. I just show up and I go.
Yeah.
But when it's over.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The first beginnings are like, am I going to be as good as, am I going to be, you know, am I in the, you know, is, am I good as everybody? And especially like great ensembles. I just did this movie Anaconda with Jack Black and Paul Rudd, where I played Jack Black's wife. And I felt pretty confident because it wasn't like too, it was pretty like in the ballpark of something I can, in my wheelhouse, as you say. But, you know, you hope you can, that. I don't know. Like, you know, like if something.
I'm just kidding. I'm sorry.
As you say all the time. You say it too much.
Oh, my God.
Just like finally feeling like, I guess I'm, as you know, as good or whatever you would say. But it's nerve wracking at first.
Can you talk a little bit about the difference between sitting at a table read for the first time, right? And nobody knows you, and you're basically, I know, see, that's why I bring it up.
They're the worst.
Yeah, that's why I bring it up. Sitting at a table read the first time, you're probably not going to get fired at the end of this table read.
Right.
But there's still that feeling.
Oh, yeah. And if it's funny, like I did this thing called Camping, which was like Lena Dunham and Jenny Connor's thing after Girls, which didn't get received very well, but it was an ensemble cast of, you know, some very funny people, and Judd Apatow was like sitting there for one of them, like literally a foot in front of me. But a lot of people, it's okay if everyone's not getting laughs or it's just kind of serious and no one's getting feedback really, because you can feel it with the comedy stuff. Everyone, you know, people get a laugh from someone else and then you're just like, oh my God.
Well,
and then
that must have been the same on Arrested Development. What a cast!
But
of
no
funny
table
characters.
Reads, thankfully.
Ah, there you go.
No table reads, but that would have been horrible. Mm-hmm. But we just jumped right on set, thankfully.
Well, in terms of vulnerability, Ione, when you're writing this book, because you're telling basically your story, I'm curious if you were thinking about the other party's vulnerability as well, whether it was like Anthony or Adam or whoever it was that you were telling a particular story about.
Yeah.
Anthony's evolved 47 times since then. I mean, it's like,
I know. I mean, he sort of said it all in scar tissue and we're kind of like have no, I mean, hopefully it'll stay after this book, but we kind of don't see each other, but we don't have any, you know, we have a lot of love for some reason still between each other. Not a lot, but you know, it's like a nice feelings toward one another in a way. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's complicated. I'm sure if I sat and really thought about it, but you know, whatever, there's love there. But Adam, the proposal got leaked to Page Six, my proposal. And then I was really worried because it sounded like this was going to be like sleaze-a-rama book, you know, like very salacious. So I wrote to Adam Horovitz and was like, listen, I don't know if you saw Page Six, but it's not going to be that kind of book. And you know, I'm, you know, have whatever integrity.
Was this years ago, like long before it was released, leaked?
This was like 3 years ago. Once wow. I wrote the pro- yeah. or 2 years ago, because it took wow. a long
yeah.
time.
So your voice was so far away from reaching the public as well that you couldn't even.
Yeah, and they make yeah. it. They just pull out like the mm-hmm. you know tell all blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. But so yeah, I'm still a little worried about a couple things, like just my dad and stuff. Like I hope he's okay. I didn't send it to him because we see each other like every 4 years, but I didn't want to send it to him also because. I don't want to send it to everybody, just like on the off chance someone's going to get really strange and then want to mm-hmm. get lawyers or something. Who knows? I just was
but
being
But that's the risk you took, right?
Yeah.
I mean, did you, I guess, you know, you put yourself out there. I mean, that is about as vulnerable as one gets. Like, all right, take shots. Judge me, if you will.
Yeah,
this
yeah,
is my
true.
Story.
Yeah.
Judge away.
Yeah. Yeah, I do have a confidence, though. It's funny when I was on Howard Stern a billion years ago. And I guess someone I was talking to said it's painful to watch. And I was like, really? But I did it because I wanted to show I can be a pretty young woman who doesn't get humiliated, because that was still in his more like humiliating women time. And I loved Howard Stern anyway, so I was excited. But I kind of still have that like, here I am, like try to bring me down. So I kind of have that too. And I had that back then, like, I'm going to show you, like, I can stand on my own 2 feet. But then someone was like, oh no, watch it. It's really cringy. And like, I feel it's uncomfortable. And I was like, oh no.
Now you've just had everybody listening go to YouTube to check out.
No, don't. No, it's not that bad. I'm not like sitting on a whatever those vibrator machines or anything. No, he's just like, all he wants to talk about is like, I don't even know what he, I thought I did great.
Listen, you survived being a successful, beautiful actress in the early 90s, which was no friggin' joke. Are either your daughters actors?
They both thought at certain times they wanted to try it out. And then I was scratching my head. I mean, I don't know if either of you have had this with kids or like, I want an agent. I'm like, I don't even know how to get, what do you get, a kid's agent in Hollywood? Like someone who's been in the business for 1,000 years, started at 15. I'm like, I don't know, maybe do a play at school first. I don't know. Like, I can't figure it out. So when we were in Australia, I'm there again, but not, just, you know, I'm living there at the moment, but we were there one other time. That's when I said to my kid, like, let's get an agent in Australia because it feels more like doable. It's smaller community. And then after a couple auditions, she was like, nah, I don't want to do
not
this.
For me.
But yeah. But speaking of vulnerability, imagine doing that now with social media. I mean, it's just,
oh yeah,
it's so much about what you're visually showing the world, not your performances and or your talents anymore.
I know, so nice. You probably agree that there was like people like styled themselves more, and like you could go to parties and open the door and there's, you know, some famous teen like making out, but no one worried mm-hmm. like you're going to be filming this or something. You know, it's just like everyone could just sort of be kids.
No, and you wouldn't have gotten away with half the things you got away with in the book because somebody would have had a phone out and shit would have gotten heavy real fast.
That's so true.
You know, that's the other thing you think of. Like, I mean, I was debaucherous right before, I mean, late 80s.
Yeah, right before.
Debaucherous.
Yeah.
And forget it. I'd have been canceled 18,000 times already.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I think if I was a man, I would have been, if I was a man, I would have, I'm sure, been canceled. But I think it was nice. There was a little bit, there was of course pressure, but it was like that added pressure wasn't there of image on, you know, having like a TikTok and all that.
But also just going into a table read and thinking, are they wondering how many followers I have? Does that matter? Am I here because of that?
I know. We weren't really thinking. And it's also mind blowing to look back and think of all the people you work with that weren't famous or wealthy when you know, and then now I'm like, oh my God, the Chili Peppers, like I knew them when they were, you know, back.
Yeah,
when
they had not come out with.
I'm just like, those guys are rich. Yeah. I'm like, God, they have. I'm like so jealous sometimes.
Can we talk a bit about your painting, Ione, and just how vulnerability plays into that sort of I guess, representation of yourself in art.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very vulnerable because, I mean, that feels so authentic to me. And that's probably why I haven't done like, I've done a couple art shows, but I like it being a private thing. But then again, a lot, you know, some people were like, I want to buy that. I want that. So I would sort of sell things one by one. Having an art show is terrible because you're walking around.
Talk about that vulnerability.
Because you want to put like earplugs in because people, like when I walk around a small art show, I'm like, I like that. That one, not as much. Oh, that one's good. That one, but if you're the artist, that's why when I was walking around, I like sat outside most. It was hard to stand in there because, like, what if someone doesn't remember or you just overhear them?
It must come even before that. Are they going to come? Are they going to show up? Are they going to come through the door?
I know.
Are they going to buy anything? And then, so let me ask you, what's this mean? Why this? Why this?
Exactly. And you're just like, ugh. But I now, as a painter, I kind of want to, because now that I'm older, I'm like, I kind of wish I had the same vulnerability. You know, when you're young, you're just like, it's pouring out of you and you can't stop writing. You can't, you know, I just couldn't help but paint and draw. I was drawing all the time. And now I have to schedule it in. Like now I'm like, I have to get in the mood and get the muse going. And it's just such a process to get vulnerable again.
Well, also there's something about understanding okay and good. And when you do that, it's just a lot more. I think when I was younger, okay was good. You know, now that you get older, you're like, okay's okay. I don't love okay.
Yeah.
If it's not going to be good, it's difficult. You know, you realize what it takes. You gotta get it. You know, and you know, because it's like being an actor. It's like you don't just show up and, you know, schmacked. It takes work. It takes a certain amount of focus. And
exactly.
It's you in a room at some point, you know, just you in a room and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of where the good stuff comes up.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like just being on the set and having fun with everybody. It's not.
Yeah. No, that's so true. So true.
Well, Ione, we end every episode with a listener question.
Okay.
So Jonathan G would like to know, you are set to star in the remake of Anaconda. I have an irrational fear of snakes. Do you have any irrational phobias?
Oh my gosh. Mine's going to be so neurotic. I mean, I'm, you know, nervous about, you know, that's too boring to say. I'm nervous about getting colds and things, but,
you mean hypochondria?
I guess that's what it's called. I don't know why people are shying away from that term these days.
I don't know. Cause hypochondria, I always think of as, oh my God, I must have something. It must be something as opposed to.
I kind of have that too, where I'm like, my first thought is cancer.
It's cancer. I got
my
cancer.
My first thought is cancer.
You
and
never
then,
go on WebMD. Never, ever,
no,
ever.
No. Never do that. But let me think about any irrational fears.
Not rational. Irrational.
Irrational. I have a weird one of, I'm a little paranoid about people talking shit about me, but as far as.
Oh my God, you've done the wrong thing. You've made a huge mistake.
I have a thing about, I think with insects and things, if they're in a more than a couple, that's always freaky. Mm. Like, that's why I think there were all those movies, Swarm. Like, remember in the 70s, there's all those movies about like.
They came from the ground. Yes.
Yeah. So I think like one cockroach, not a fan, but if it was like a bunch, anything that's like grouped up, my friend got leeches on her from a walking in the mud in Australia, actually.
Well, I was just going to bring that up. You mentioned Australia. The bugs in Australia are different than in LA.
Yeah. What I do, there's these huntsman spiders that are not poisonous, but they're big and hairy and they are fast. And you get them like once or twice a year in the house, but they don't bite, but they're not good. I think if you have to just turn off that thing in your mind, you can't, you know, if you're getting that out of the house, you can't let yourself go there.
But that's like, it's like the fight or flight response though. You can't always help it. You see it
That's true.
Crawling across your bed. You think it's there for the rest of the night.
Yeah. I'm a little bit, nervous about, not irrationally fearful. I think horses are phenomenal, but I can't read them. I don't know what they're, and I've ridden them in my life, but I like dogs. I can tell, cats. I can tell. And like, oh, that I shouldn't pet that cat. It looks like it's, you know, that dog I can tell, like, you know, it's happy. It's not da, da, da. But horses, I'm like a little nervous to pet them.
What about a large group of horses, like a swarm?
a swarm of horses.
That's my fear, a swarm of horses.
I kept trying to ask him questions. Like, I wanted to get the difference between being vulnerable when you're writing and being vulnerable as an actor. And I never really was able to articulate it well. So I'm going to ask you, Jason, when you're acting and when you're...
Yes, I can't answer that question.
But you know what was cool is that with her, with all of her arts, mm-hmm. being an actor, painting, and now writing, she's just putting herself out there. Mm-hmm. That is about the most vulnerable thing, you know, just putting yourself up for judgment, criticism is extremely vulnerable. And I think when you're an artist like her, it's necessary. Like, what are your options? Not doing it? I don't think so.
But I also think one of the benefits of getting older, and I know this is kind of a cliche, but it's true, is you just don't give a fuck as much. And so, we didn't talk about this, but I'm sure she couldn't have shared this with the world 20 years ago because you're not ready yet.
Well, she also probably hadn't settled in her. Yeah. Well, no, it hadn't settled in her yet. You know, there wasn't the acceptance. You know, sometimes I spent a lot of my, you know, younger years just going, I fucked up. And then you look back and you go, no, that was just part of life. That was the experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is fun. I like doing this. Did I mention that? I do. And thank you all for listening.
Music by Denny Nucci. Produced and edited by the same two people you heard hosting this show, because they have no friends.